Paths of Purity by Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. It's a little bit longer, more detailed, also excellent sefer. You have in Hebrew a few classics. One is Ohel Aryeh. It's an old classic that was around me when I was getting married, but they've republished it. People find it very, very good. And there's a newer one from Israel called Marah Kohen, which both in Hebrew and again are very, very well received. On the longer side, if a person has more time and wants to spend more time learning these issues and even having guidance with footnotes, so you have longer texts here by Rabbi Blumenkrantz, Geffen Poria. There's a lot of footnotes in the back. Rabbi Eider's books called Sefer Hilchos Nida. Eider is not completed yet. His treatment of Nida, so it's two out of a projected probably three or four volumes. Now you have the two volumes of Rabbi Forrest, the Art Scroll volumes. So all of these are very, very good, very valuable in Hebrew if a person wants to spend time learning with somebody else. So in Hebrew you have Rabbi Vosner's Sefer, Shevet Alevi, an excellent Sefer, which reviews the material, very, very good style. You have Nissen Karelitz, the Bechut Hashani, the very new Sefer, it's very good. You have the longest Svarim by the Ashulchan if you have more time. So all these are things if a person has time wants to set aside a few hours a week to go through the material. So all of these are very helpful Svarim. But for the purposes of our course, it'd be worthwhile to go through one small book over the course of the next few weeks just to make sure that anything that we've missed you can pick up it easily. Anything which sounds different in writing than the way I said it, we can discuss it and make sure that we iron it out. So today we're going to discuss the first, how a woman becomes a menstruant. First, how she becomes a menstruant physiologically. And the way that works is that the average woman who bleeds once a month, has her period once a month, that's a result of the uterine lining building up and then sloughing off. So the average, a woman's uterine lining, the inside the uterus, the cellular lining that builds up the uterus is like a pear-shaped organ inside, which hopefully carries the fetus through gestation. And the period is this lining of cells, a very vascular, blood-rich lining, which because it builds up over the course of the 14 days approximately, and then the weight of it after 14 days and certain endocrine changes causes just to begin to slough off and fall out. And the way that works is that during the first 14 days of a cycle, the ovaries, which are right next to the uterus, produce estrogen. The ovaries have a dual function in the body. They are the site where the eggs grow, and they are also where the eggs are kept, and they're also a gland that produces estrogen. And the pituitary gland excites, for the first 14 days of every period, excites the ovaries to produce estrogen. The estrogen is what excites the uterus to produce this blood, this vascular, blood-rich lining. And that's what happens for 14 days. Around the 14th day, the egg follicle inside the ovaries ruptures, and the egg travels up, attached to the ovaries, are these two tubes called the fallopian tubes. And it travels up the fallopian tubes. In the fallopian tubes, hopefully, the egg becomes fertilized, and then travels further up, and via the end of the fallopian tubes, it makes its way inside the uterus. And then hopefully, that fertilized egg gets implanted inside the walls of the uterus, which now have had about 14 days to actually build up. And then when that happens, so then there's a biofeedback system that tells the ovaries that things are happening, and the ovaries continue to produce estrogen and kick in with a higher amount of progesterone as well. And then what that does is for the next 8.5 months, the estrogen progesterone it continues to nourish the placenta and the growing fetus, and after about 9 months they have a full-term baby. But if something doesn't happen on the way, if the egg doesn't get fertilized, or the fertilized egg doesn't get implanted, or gets implanted and drops out, so then the message gets back to the Ovi. Everything, Charlie.
They have to know about the 35 days of Hanukkah.
It's 34, heading into Pesach.
I know, but still, they still have to learn about the 35 days of Hanukkah. Because the essence of everything stems from the 35 days of Hanukkah.
It's early. It's early for Hanukkah.
Yeah, but you know, the Rebbe spoke about it.
Not this time of year, though.
If you understand about the 35 days of Hanukkah, then you'll understand when the Rebbe said that 12 years ago when we went to Kuwait, they should go to Basra. And it happened just before. Went to Basra. You have to understand, Rebbe speaks, he's listening.
So then what happens is that the message gets back to the ovaries to cut down their production of estrogen, because nothing's happening. And then it takes about 14 days. 14 days of being being estrogen starved. The walls of the uterus, the cells, the endometrial lining, the cells begin to lose its integrity. And then, after 14 days of being estrogen starved, the adherence loses it and begins to slough off. First a little bit of staining, some more staining, and then it builds up to real flow. So the average period is about a 30-day interval, but the average period itself is about 5 days. Most of them leave for about 5 days. They will have a day of light staining, a day of very heavy staining. Second day already builds up probably to a flow, then the second day it's probably a flow. And then the third day is heavy flow, and the fourth day the flow begins to break, and then the fourth night, and most of the fifth day is already staining, and then usually it stops. That's the average. With a wide range of variations. There's some women who have squeaker periods that will stay for 3 days, and there's some women who will bleed Peshafa for 5-6 days and have 7 day periods. These are all levels in the range. But the average woman would expect is about a 5 day period. And the same thing with the 30 day or 28 day cycle that I described, that's also the average. There's a wide range. There are people who have shorter periods, and then people have only bleed once every 2 or 3 months. But the average is once a month. Right? The only thing that I think is inaccurate about what I said, and I described that that ovulation takes place after about 14 days, and then the period takes place 14 days later. So that's not accurate. The accurate way to say it is that that ovulation takes place 14 to 16 days before the period starts. And we never, until recently, we never knew when ovulation was going to take place. If a woman had a 30-day, she bled on the 30th day, so then we could figure out backwards that she ovulated some 14 to 16 days earlier. If she had a 50-day interval, so then we would work backwards 14 to 16 days before that when she ovulated, and so on and so forth. So nowadays we do have certain methods whereby we can have some indication of when ovulation will take place. But when a woman has a long period, so that's what it means. It means that she's ovulating much later than the average. That's all. But that's still pretty accurate. I believe that almost all women will ovulate 14 to 16 days before the next period. All right. That is menstruation. And the Torah tells us to mark menstruation in two ways. One way is that a woman becomes Tameya, that she cannot go to Beis HaMikdash, she can't bring Korbanos. That hardly affects us nowadays. And the other is that she becomes Asur, she becomes prohibited to her husband. Right? Husband and wife cannot have relations. And that's the basis of what we're going to discuss. All right? Now, would it be that easy? Some would just say that a woman becomes a neet every time she menstruates. And that's, the truth is, that probably 98% of the times your wives are going to be nidos, because they menstruated, because they've given birth. There could be other situations that we'll discuss right now. How does a woman become a nid as far as the Torah, as far as halacha is concerned? When is a woman considered to be a menstruant as far as halacha is concerned? Right, menstruation in halacha is called nida. One of two reasons, because nida means nod, to move, the blood is flowing down. It's an experience that we cannot apparently understand what it means to have like a blood flow, a blood discharge. Right? That's why it's called nida, like a flow within one's body. or from the root word of dava, to become ill. Because many, many women, if not the most women, have some kind of illness when they become a menstruant. Either they have some kind of weakness, or achiness, or a mood swing. It's very rare that it just happens. The only thing is the blood flow itself. Usually something else comes, a dava, becomes a little bit of an illness. Now, when the Torah describes menstruation, the Torah says that as far as Allah is concerned, a woman becomes a nidish, becomes a menstruant, when she has her flow. And her flow in halakhic terms is called a re'iya. A re'iya is like a sighting. We call the onset. The onset is she finds some bleeding. That's called a re'iya. And then the Torah says in addition to the re'iya, she has to have what we call a hargasha. Hargasha is some kind of sensation. Some kind of physiological sensation which accompanies the onset. This is not premenstrual symptoms that we'll discuss later on. Hargasha means that a woman actually feels when the period starts. This is something that our women no longer experience. Every so often we'll discuss that there are certain real changes that women have undergone since the time of the Gemara that we see in this area of halacha. This is one of them. Gemara describes that when a woman becomes a nida, it would wake her up in the middle of the night. But she had her onset. It was such a physiological, powerful experience that she couldn't sleep through it. And nowadays, a woman becomes a nida, I would say 99% of the time, maybe 100% of the time, she goes to the bathroom, she's about to use the bathroom, she sees the stain in her undergarments. And she may be expecting it because she's a little bit bloated, because she's not feeling so well. Right, it's the time of the month. Alright. But that's a major change. I don't know anybody nowadays that wakes up in the middle of the night because the period has started. And that never came my way. So that's a major change. But in the Gemara's time, a woman became a nida. The Gemara says that she needs both things to make her a nida. Why? That's a din de raisa, because the Torah says, V'isha kisiya zoma dama b'vsara, when the blood flows down her flesh. So you know that the Torah is very, very particular with every single word it uses. So why did the Torah say the blood flows down the flesh? Where else is it going to come from? So the Gemara says there's a point that the woman has to feel, she has to be margish, she has to feel the blood coming down her flesh. And that's what makes her into a nida. She has to feel the blood leaving the uterus. That makes her into a nida. So that would be how a woman becomes a nida min atara, a nida from a biblical perspective. That's the din of nida. Both a re'iya, the onset, as well as the argosha, some kind of sensation. And that is what would separate her becoming, her being a menstruant, and her having some kind of other kind of bleeding, whether it's some kind of abrasion in the cervix, whether it's some kind of yeast infection, whether it could be some kind of hemorrhoid. There could be other things that will cause bleeding. So if a woman has some kind of bleeding, how do we know if it's menstruation or not? So in the ideal system that Sarah gave us, it was a very clear indication. She had this powerful feeling which accompanied the onset. The modern poskim discuss that hargasha is one of three sensations, right? none of which really occur anymore. But of the more recent text, so if a woman has, if she feels the cervix opening, that would be hargasha. That'd be one. It doesn't happen nowadays, no one feels the cervix opening. The other is nizdaza kol gufa. She feels her body tremor. She gets the shakes. Doesn't happen now, as far as I know. The third is zivaz davalach. She feels a discharge sensation. That we'll discuss. That one may have nowadays. That they may have. So those are hargoshas. So a woman becomes a nida when she has her onset that's accompanied by some kind of physiological sensation. And most poskim tweak that a little bit nowadays. Because since women don't have the physiological sensation, so therefore most poskim will say a woman becomes a nida min haTorah. She becomes a menstruant as far as the Torah is concerned when she has her period and when the presentation is like a period. In other words, that she has a blood flow. It's the time of the month when she's expecting her period. It begins in a stain and develops into a real flow. Since we don't have the physiological sensation that accompanies the onset, so in its place, we say, well, as long as all indications are that this is her period, we'll call it, that we'll call a nida nowadays. We use our gut feeling, flow, presentation, all these things. That's how it becomes a nida as far as Torah is concerned. So the question comes up, what happens if a woman has other kinds of indication, other kinds of staining, and it's not a real flow? So again, if there's a wound there, that would make into a nida. If a woman has an abrasion or a wound outside the cervix, that would not make her into a nida. One of the most common sources of staining that we have nowadays is the pap smear. That doesn't make her into a nida. Pap smear is a pre-cancerous screening test that the doctor takes a few cells from the cervix and tests them. So women go through this all the time. The doctors are much more aggressive than they used to be, so they take a small little brush and they put it to the tip of the cervix and they take some cells. So most women will bleed for, they won't start bleeding right away, but starting about 10 hours afterwards, they'll begin to stain for about 24 hours, something like that.
Right.
So when that happens, we know there's a wound there. That does not make you into a nida. Because we know the doctor must look to the wound. We know exactly where it is. It's on the cervix. And it's supposed to bleed. And women do bleed from it. So that's called damaka. That's blood that comes from wound. Doesn't make into a nida. Right? So, Chazal were concerned, though, that even though this is the case, even though that bleeding, which is not uterine bleeding, which is, let's say, wound blood, does not make into a nida, Chazal were very concerned that women would get very confused. And if we tell them a woman comes with some kind of staining, she has some kind of staining in her undergarments, she has maybe some staining on her leg or something, he tells the rabbi she has this kind of staining, the rabbi will say, well, was it hargosha or no hargosha? She said, no hargosha. So we were concerned that women would get very, very confused. She says, but the blood is coming from the uterus, so I should be a nida. The rabbi will say, no, you're not a nida, because you're going to teach them the whole Old Gemara, that has to be Kisti and Zevi Bavsara, and so on and so forth. So Chazal said it's not going to happen. The only way that we're going to make women feel comfortable with halacha is if we say that whenever there's any kind of staining at all, that can't be dismissed clearly as some kind of womb blood, so that will make her into a nida. Right? Chazal made that din, that any kind of staining should be evaluated, and a staining is called a kesem. In modern Hebrew, ketem is a stain. In Gemara's time, same idea. Kesem or ketem is a stain. And ksamim, ktamim, is a plural for stain. So Chazal developed the idea of stains, a lach of stain. And even though a woman finds a stain in her undergarment, as far as the Torah is concerned, she's not a nida. Right? Why? Because it's not around, it's her period time. She came back from Mikvah a few days ago. It doesn't look like a period. It's not building up. It's not a flow. So as far as the Torah, as far as the biblical law is concerned, she is not a nida. She's permissible to rather 100%. Chazal made a din. Chazal established that she should be considered to be a nida min a rabbana. Anytime she's any kind of staining, any kind of kesem. And the reason is because it'll be too confusing for women if we just dismiss it out of hand. Right? And the truth is the Chazal were very, very, very on target even to this day. Because one of the... one of the most difficult things to explain is when certain questions come up, as you'll see, and we're able to dismiss certain staining because it doesn't even meet the threshold of what is ketem, what a stain is. And very often people have a hard time understanding why we're making light of what is really uterine bleeding. So the rabbis answered very, very well that if we'll just tell a woman, forget about it, don't worry about it, she'll get very confused. And next time, when she starts having her period, and it's just a stain, she'll say, last time I had a stain there, I said it wasn't anything. So she's going to know, well, last time was because it was 3 days after coming home from mikveh, and this time it's the end of the month, and she expects her period. She's not going to make that distinction. So therefore the rabbi said, halach of ksamim, kesam, ksamim, that any time a woman has any kind of staining, that could make you into a nida midirabanan, from a rabbinic perspective. And the rabbis also appreciated this is a tremendous chumrah. Tremendous stringency. Here you have a woman with a cut, right? The woman has some kind of unexplainable bleeding. So as far as the Torah is concerned, she's not a nida. She came back from mikveh 3 or 4 days ago. As far as the biblical law is concerned, the Torah is concerned, she's not a nida. She can't become a nida now. That's just our gosha, and she, less the period presentation. But now the rabbi said there's some kind of stain, she becomes a nida right away. So the rabbi took the next step. It's called the heim amru v'heim amru. That the rabbis are allowed to shape the halacha if it's a rabbinic legislation. Rabbinic legislation, they can shape as much as they want. So what the rabbis did in this case is they said, well, if we don't do anything at all, women will get confused. If we come down with a sledgehammer and saying any kind of staining will make you into a nida, we are going to make women nidas unnecessarily. We're going to create many situations of couples not being together. So therefore they pulled back and they said, well, we'll keep the din of ksamim in place. However, we'll create 5 exceptions or 5 different tests. That a stain has to match in order for it to become tummy. So that way the woman will be asking her question. She'll realize the rabbi, they're not just dismissing it. Next time she has the stain, she's not going to chuck, she's not going to blow it away, say it's mutzer, because last time it was mutzer, the rabbi is taking it, asking questions. Take it seriously. So that's how we work with the stain. What are the 5 tests? I'm just going to discuss right now. The 5 tests that a stain or kesem has to either pass or fail, in order for it not to be a problem. If any one of these tests will make the stain permissible, right? This is the first thing we look at, is whether the blood could have come from something else, other than the uterus, right? Again, so we're discussing right now, is a woman finds a stain, a red stain in her undergarments, she finds a red stain in her body, so she's concerned. So if it's at a time when she's expecting a period, right, she's probably getting a period. But let's say she just got home from mikvah. She's not expecting a period right now. So then the rabbi said that as far as the Torah is concerned, she's not a nida. As far as the rabbis are concerned, we got to take this under consultation. Got to figure this one out. So the first thing we look at is, well, could the blood be coming from something else? Could there be an alternate source of the blood? Called the alibi. Could we give an alibi for this blood? So the Gemara says you don't have to open up a file of the FBI. You don't have to be do a very, very careful study. As long as you can figure out some good possibility. Gemara says, for example, let's say this woman works the back of a butcher shop. So there's blood all over the place. Right? Then she comes home, she finds some blood in her stockings and in her legs. So it's over b'shushal tabachim. She was going in the back of Machan Yehuda, so she picked up some blood things there. Unless she does the ambulance drive or something. And God forbid there was a bad situation that day. And they had a few trauma victims or something. So she got some blood on her shoes or blood on her undergarments. So we would say, no, she probably picked it up over there. Some kind of, or let's say she had a pap smear. Or let's say she went to the doctor and the doctor found that the area was soft and friable. Right? Or let's say she has hemorrhoids. Any of these things, we would say, all right, don't worry about it, as long as it's somewhat reasonable, right? And that's if it's a kesem. That's if it's a stain found on the body of some kind of undergarment. That if this is the beginning of a period, it's a stain found at the end of the month, the day she's expecting a period, nothing doing, then we would be more concerned about it. Or let's say it came out, the blood came out and something was inserted inside, like a tampon. That is in the biblical point already. If blood is found on something inserted inside the vagina, that's considered to be a possibility of a nidum in a Torah. So that would be pushed up to the din d'oraisa level. And would not enjoy any of the leniencies we have here. Here we're talking about nothing was inserted, the blood came out on its own volition, and we now are saying that if we can chalk this up to some specific source, we can be lenient and forget about it. That's called, in halacha, it's called the taliyah, to hang it, to be told it on something. That's the alibi. Then the rabbi said, right, and this is an example, it's important to know this difference. If a woman plants a tampon inserted inside, and she finds blood in the tampon, so then the only time that we can be lenient with that tampon is if we have a doctor to look inside and to actually find where the blood could be coming from. Right, there you cannot say, well, she's had, I remember a few years ago she had hemorrhoids, I never treated it. I remember she went to the doctor recently, and he said there might be some business. That wouldn't work. If something is inserted inside, you got to do the research. You got to know for sure there's something that is bleeding. On the other hand, if it's blood on some kind of undergarments in the body, then it's at a time when we are not expecting your period. So then the rabbis were very easygoing. They wanted us to use the alibis, to find some alibis. So we didn't have to prove it as long as it made sense. You remember, she has hemorrhoids and she hasn't treated them. So we don't know if they're bleeding today. But they're bleeding yesterday and she didn't treat them, so we can remake them. She had a yeast infection that was bleeding a week or two ago. And she didn't treat it. So it's been quiet for a week. No. So if we would be concerned that it might be Nida Minat Torah, we'd have to do due diligence to the research, check it up, and so on. But since we're talking about what at worst would be a Nida Minat Rabbanon, so then the rabbis themselves said, we don't want to put you through the ringer to test everything, we just want like some control over it. So if the if it stands to reason that we know what the alibi was, fine. So then we would tell this woman she's permissible not to worry about the stain. That's rule number one. Rule number two is if the stain is less than the size of a penny, then you don't have to worry about it. How do we get the size of a penny? Because in the Gemara's time, the most common bed bug that was around had blood the size of a penny. It's kigris. So when the rabbis made the rule that only if it is a gris or more, a penny's worth of blood or more, when the rabbis made this rule, they had in mind this bug that was around in Talmudic time, and they said any blood which is less than the size of a penny probably comes from this bug. That's the way it was in that time. The person stood up and found a splotch of blood in their pants, they would say, kill another one. Right? That's what it was. It was such a common bug. If it was more than the size of a penny, then they figured it was something else. But less than the size of a penny, they figured it was just this very common bug. So therefore, the rabbis made a rule that if one finds a stain and it is less than the size of a penny or less, then we can be lenient. We need not worry about it. Right? Then we would say that does not make her into a nida, the size of a penny or less. Right? So you'll tell me that it makes no sense because we no longer have those bed bugs anymore. That was true at the time of the Gemara. So here the Chassam Sofer points out that the halacha was formulated in this way. But once it is formulated that way, so then that becomes the way it's legislated. You may have a certain reason for legislating a certain way. But once as legislation is a very narrow thing. Once it is legislated a certain way, that's what defines it. So when it comes to this as well, the Chassam Sofer says, why do we still work with the size of a penny? A gris, it's an old concern which is no longer around. So Chassam Sofer said, no, because when the rabbis made the rule, they were legislating. And they legislated a stain that is less than the size of a penny, we don't worry about it. So even though their reasoning may no longer be with us, but the statement of Allah is the same. The Pesach Chuba quotes it. It's I think in the Chubas. So that's the rule number two. Now, rule number two, you don't need a rabbi for this. And anybody can figure out most of the time where their stain is more or less the size of a penny. Every so often you'll need rabbi number one for a little bit of experience in case it's a funny shape. And some that need a rabbi for different reasons because one may have several different small spots and we'll have to make a determination if it should be conjoined or not. And that's more of a difficult question. Alright? The third issue is was the stain found on white garments or colored garments? Why should that make a difference? So here, we have to understand, go back to legislation again. The point is the following. If the stain is found in colored garments, we can dismiss it. If it's found in white garments, we have to deal with it. In fact, that's why the Rishonim write that women, whenever they can, should be wearing colored undergarments. Because it'll save running to rabbi. Could save asking some questions, could save you some time. So women should always be wearing colored undergarments. Now, what is the reason for this? What do we care about, the color or not? So it goes back to the same thing. The rabbis were very aware that they were creating a very significant stringency. So they wanted to minimize it. So they said, well, if the stain is found on a colored garment, then we can't really be sure as to what the color is. So therefore, instead of sending the woman on a chase to find out whether this kind of yellow shows the color, and this kind of peach doesn't show the color, and turquoise blue will show, and the light, the bronze won't, so the rabbis made a rule, if it's colored on the garments, don't worry about it. Same thing, the rabbis have the right to do that. They're making the rules over here. It's rabbinic legislation. So they can shape the rules any way that they want. So they said that if the garment is colored, so the woman need not worry about it at all. Right? And that's why we advocate that women should wear colored garments at all times. Right? Now, how colored is colored? So there's a debate. Machlokes amongst various posts and various svarim. What I believe is the consensus, certainly in America, is anything that is colored, anything but off-white. Either off-white, you could also argue that off-white is somewhat painted, but anything but off-white, if it's a color, it could be a pastel color, it could be a dark color, it could be a color which shows red, because it doesn't show red, color is a color. That's, the consensus of most svarim. Right, so even if it's a light pink, anything which is colored, you have to be careful sometimes, because sometimes you'll buy a light colored undergarment and after you wash it for a year or two, it becomes a white undergarment. So just because you remember it as being colored, that doesn't do much good. It has to really be colored. Now, there is a debate, there is a machlok, because some Rishonim say no, it should be a color that actually masks the red. Because the whole point was that we're not sure whether it's red or not. So there are those who say you should actually use a color that does in fact mask the red. So halacha l'maaseh, for practical purposes, what I would say is the following. That when it comes to undergarments, I would ask my wife to get dark, definite colors. To be stricter, to be more machmir, to make her life easier as well. She won't have any questions, we're bothered by certain things. On the other hand, when it comes to bed sheets in the bedroom, so there I don't think a masafta, you can insist that your wife only buys black sheets and blue sheets and brown sheets. When it comes to undergarments, she only buy dark greens and dark reds and blacks and blues. When it comes to the bedroom, so most women have a feeling for the way they want the bedroom to look. But you can't impose so much on your wife. But you can ask your wife, because it's in their best interest that there shouldn't be any white in the sheets. Sheets should be colored. So there could be a pastel color, there could be a beige color. Beige, I mean, there should be a tan, not a beige. There should be a tan, a definite brown, some definite color. But that one can be makel on, because it's very hard for a wife otherwise. But on the other garments, it's better to use definite colors. So you have the consensus of use. All right. So that's the issue of the colored garment. All right. So now next, and again, how's it going to sort itself out? The woman has a stain. She's going to call the rabbi. The rabbi's going to ask her, was the stain more or less than a penny? So she says less than a penny, and said, forget about it. If the stain could have come from some other source, I will dismiss it. Right. So now we have the fourth test. Number one is alibi. Number two is size. Number three is color of the garment. Number four is the hardest one. Number four is whether it's on synthetic fiber or natural fiber. What difference does it make what kind of fiber it's on? Because when the rabbis made the rules, they wanted to make it easier, not harder. So they didn't want to have a situation where a woman would become a nida, but the clothing that she had would not become tameya. Because in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, and I believe shortly afterward as well, so the clothing could also become tummy, and last week's Parshas Parah. And then you have to take the clothing to the mikveh to be matarit. So let's say the clothing was made of an unnatural fiber. It's a davar she'enu mekabel tuma. It was made from polyester. It's a plastic. And, or let's say it was another example besides the polyester is alright, so it was a davar she'enu mekabel tuma. So then the rabbis did not want to make it harder for the women. They said, since this garment is not going to become tamei, we're not going to make you tamei either. Because the whole point was to make things simple, to simplify, this is going to make things much harder to figure out. So the rabbis made a rule that anything which in and of itself is not mikabel tuma, namely the stain falls on polyester and nylon, so then that you can dismiss the stain as well. That's the kind of thing also you may want to ask your rabbi, because it's very, very hard to figure out what is or is not mekabel tuma. Alright? And then the final test is the color of the stain. Alright? It has to be a problematic color. So, let's review. Halacha lemaaseh. Practically speaking, a woman will become a nida because she's menstruating or because because she's giving birth to a child. Right? Now, in addition to those situations, in addition, she could become a nida midirabbanan if she finds a stain. How is this going to work? It's going to be that if a woman finds a stain, she's going to call the rabbi. The rabbi's going to say, when was the last time you went to mikvah? Right? When are you expecting to go to mikvah? When are you expecting your period? So if that's what the first, the rabbi may be a very careful guy. He may first ask the woman, do you ever have any, was this accompanied by some kind of physiological sensation? He may ask her just to make sure she doesn't make mistakes. In case she's a dinosaur, she still has these hargashas. So he wants to be safe, he'll say, any kind of physiological sensation accompany it, just say, rabbi, I found in the bathroom. I found the stain in my undergarments. Right? Sometimes the rabbi will ask that, we'll ask, how did you find it? So the woman will say, went to the bathroom. So, alright, so right away he knows. Then he'll ask, when are you expecting your period? Right? Because he wants to find out, is it a pre-menstruation kind of thing? She'll say, rabbi, I went to the mikvah 2 nights ago. I just got home from the mikvah. Right? That's what I'm calling. Right? So right away he knows, that tells the rabbi that he's not looking at nida mida eraisa. This woman, as far as the Torah, as far as the biblical law is concerned, muteris, she's permissible. However, his mind is now going to go through the rabbinic situation. As far as the rabbis are concerned, she may be a nida. And once you're a nida of minirabbanan, what's a nida from rabbinic, with the same rules, as being a nida day right, the same 12 days, same 7 days of clean, of getting ready. This is very aggravating. So he'll try to help Rosh, just hold on, let's figure this out. Number one, I'll ask, could this blood have come from anything else? Right? Number one, maybe it isn't blood. Maybe it's a manicure or something. Maybe you scratched yourself. Maybe you have some kind of cervical inflammation. That's number one. Could the blood be coming from something else? Maybe you have hemorrhoids, something. He says, no. Never happened to me. I got nothing doing with it. The doctor 2 weeks ago, and it's perfect. He'll have. So then I'll ask her, well, how large is the stain? So she says that it was less than a penny. He goes, fine, don't worry about it. Right? That doesn't really get very confused. I mean, don't worry about it. I'm bleeding, right? So, but the fact that she asked the child, the rabbi said, in this case, don't worry about it, give it a piece of it. Alright. Then if she says, no, I really don't know, I really can't tell if it's more, more or less than a penny. Right? So he made something, have a look at it. Yeah, I'll be able to tell. Right? I'll be able to measure it out. She can't measure it out because she doesn't know how to add a piece from here and a piece from there. If they have to add, they shouldn't have the different rules. Right? She may not understand that you look at a very specific part of the stain. So she says, I don't know, look, to me it looks like it's more than a penny. Alright? So then the next thing the rabbi will ask, well, was it on, what kind of garments was it on? White, red, blue. So she'll say, she'll probably say, Rabbi, if there's a kala, I never wear white undergarments, except for if it's during the seventh kinnis. I'm always wearing color, but just today, I ran out of colored undergarments. So just today, I woke up and it was dark, and I took the wrong pair, as it usually happens. So then the rabbi will try one more possibility. He'll say, maybe it was plastic, maybe it was polyester, nylon, maybe it was fake silk. She'll say, no. Health, only pure cotton. Right, a little signia. Something we wear around here. So then they'll obviously have to have a look at it, have to see it. Maybe it's not red, maybe it's brown. Maybe only a part of it is brown, maybe a small part is brown. That's the way it goes. But if you don't know the halacha, so this woman is going to think the rabbi is very strange. Here, she called up to find out whether she's a nida or not, expecting that the rabbi will say she's a nida. He wants to know whether the garment was colored, whether it was more or less than a penny. So unless you understand what the rabbi is going through, and in his mind he's saying, De'iraisa, de'rabbanan, biblical, rabbinic. Rabbinic, I have these five tests to work out. So very often, most of the time, a stain will not make a woman to a nida. Most of the time. Once in a while, a woman how could forget. Okay, a few more details are important. The size of a penny, detail number one. The size of a penny is only certainly relevant when it comes to garments. The woman finds a stain on her body, so then Shulchan Aruch quotes a second view that the size of a penny is irrelevant, and even the smaller size is still a problem. And the reason for that is because if a person sort of swiped a bug on their thigh, they probably would remember it. So therefore there's a question as to whether the amount applies to the body. That would be in the discussion the rabbi has to make a decision on, because both positions are found in Shulchan Aruch. Another thing which often comes up is very often a woman will be wearing something just polyester, like pantyhose. So she may be wearing white pantyhose because she's figured, what's my problem, wearing colored undergarment. And it goes all the way through sometimes. So then we may be able to dismiss it on the basis that it is on something which is polyester, nylon, rayon, shenama kabel tumah. However, there's a big however over here, and that is that very often in the most sensitive area, they weave in certain cotton for hygienic reasons. So that one may have to check that out, and may have to discuss that with the rabbi. Similarly, after you're first married, we'll discuss this later on in a different context, many couples have what's called a mattress cover. They want to protect the mattress. So the mattress cover, in my experience, has been almost always white. And the mattress cover is probably, most of them are 50% natural and 50% polyester, which doesn't really help us out. So the ideal situation in that case is if one is expecting some kind of bleeding, we'll discuss it later on, when a woman is first married or something, to put the towels there and use towels to protect the mattress cover. Right? We'll discuss it also sometimes one can be lenient with the mattress cover depending on the way it was made. All right. So again, so far we've discussed how a woman becomes a nida min haTorah, a woman becomes a nida min haTorah when she gives birth to a baby, number two, and number three, she'll become a nida min haRabbanan when she has if she has a stain, which will be rare that'll actually make a nida haRabbanan. When else will she become a nida? We'll discuss later on, she'll become a nida as a result of the first time that she and her husband are together, right, the breaking of the hymen, dam besulim, that will also make her into a nida. She, husband, a person has the obligation, rachmanu son, a woman can become prohibited to her husband if God forbid either husband or wife are in Avelos, 7 days of Avelos, they'll get to it a separate thing. But how else can a woman have the status of a Nida? So there are two other possibilities. One is extremely rare, if ever happening nowadays, and that is completion through it. And then there's one other possibility, and that is if something is pushing the cervix open, either from the inside or the outside, then that could also make it into a nida, even if no blood was seen. And the two times a woman will become a nida, even if no blood was seen. One is the first time husband and wife together, we'll discuss it in detail later on. And the second is what we're discussing right now. And that's very, very rare. And then there's one other situation which used to be fairly common, which used to be fairly common, happened, that doesn't happen anymore. And that is psichas hakever. Right? If the uterus is forced open by something, then that will make her into a nida, whether she sees any bleeding or not. Whether there's blood or not. Right? What does that mean? So in the Gemara's time, it was referring to something we don't see nowadays at all. That's called a dry miscarriage. That's if in the first 4 months of marriage, the 4 months after conception, that the baby is expelled. So it's a miscarriage. So the miscarriage usually comes out full of blood. But theoretically, you could have a dry miscarriage. And for instance, on the books on it. Right? Or a person has some kind of procedure that requires opening the cervix, so that would make her into a nida, whether or not there's any bleeding or not. Right? Psichas hakever. If the womb is open, she becomes a nida. That is not clear in the Gemara. Whether it's a chazaka that aims psichas hakever lo dam, that a chazaka that arises from the rabbanan, it's not clear in the Rishon. Right. There are certainly those who hold the day right. That comes to Chazak. Now, again, so dry miscarriage doesn't happen nowadays. Or a foreign object being expelled doesn't happen nowadays. But what used to happen until about 15 years ago, and the note of you that thought it was of equal concern, is if a doctor inserted something into the... inserted something past the cervix, which may have caused the cervix to open. So the note of Yehuda says what difference does it make whether the bleeding is as a result of the baby pounding from the inside to get out, or whether it's a result of something being inserted inside. So the note of Yehuda, Yechezkel Lando of Prague, one of the great, great post Shulchan Aruch authors, but very much post Shulchan Aruch. Hundreds of years later, then Yechezkel Lando of Prague, so he thought that any time we force the cervix open from the inside, that makes the woman into a nida, right? Automatically. So that position is also not so practical nowadays, because what's happened nowadays is almost everything which goes past the cervix is so small that it doesn't require any kind of dilation. They asked the note of Yehuda, well, how big must it be in order for it to cause them to be in nida? So he said it has to be like the size of a regular piece of straw, like the cross-sectional area of one small finger. But he was pointing out that less than that, the cervix is always open. Otherwise, the woman couldn't menstruate. The cervix is always open. So if you push something through that fits into the hole, so you won't require any dilation, it won't be painful. So the Nevi Yehuda said that if something is pushed into the cervix, which is bigger than the hole, so then it's going to, it may cause, then we have to assume that it's going to force the cervix open, and there'll be some bleeding whether we see it or not. All right? That was the Note of Yehuda's principle. Practically speaking, the Note of Yehuda's principle is no longer operational, because nowadays almost all the instruments that go past the cervix are so small that it doesn't cause any dilation. And unless they're actually going past cervix to empty out the uterus. But other than that, it's this in of itself is much less of a problem. All right?
Just working on it.
I don't know if I'm the truth. Without the I'm the truth, I don't know. Good. So again, how does a woman become a Nida? 99% of the time because she's menstruating or she's giving birth to a child. And then the other one should become a Nida once in a lifetime because the first time the husband and wife have relations together. I don't know if she'll ever become a Nida as a result of a medical instrument, because they're just so narrow and thin nowadays. And I don't know if she'll ever become a Nida because of a hargosha without bleeding, and maybe she'll become a nida as a result of a stain once a decade, I don't know, maybe not that. No, that's pretty rare, right? That she may have a question that many women have, but that'll be hard to be makel for. That's rare. All right. One more issue we should just we have to get back to. And I was discussing hargoshas. So I said that there are three argoshos that the post can refer to. One is the body tremor, we don't see that anymore. The other is the cervix opening, we don't see anymore, and we don't even know how it ever happened because there's a certain kind of muscle which you're not supposed to feel. And the third issue, a discharge sensation. That was a very strong debate between the Chassam Sofer and the Note of Yehuda, and Rav Yaakov Melissa. And as a result, we also rarely use that as a discharge sensation, as a form of hargosha. Right, what was the debate? The Note of Yehuda said, look, if one feels a discharge sensation, which is, that might be hargosha, feeling the period. The Chassam Sofer, Moshe Schreiber, said, what are you talking about? Women have discharge sensations all month long. So how can you say that she feels something this month that makes into a nida? She's got no reason to assume it's associated with menstruation, with bleeding. So that's where the Chassam Sofer dismissed it. Rav Yaakov Melissa has like an in-between position. He says it very much depends on if she feels the blood rolling down from high up in the vagina or just in the bottom of the vagina. If it's just in the bottom of the vagina, that's not really not a serious concern. If it's higher up, then he would say then we should take it more seriously as being the whole thing being on the din de rice of a biblical level. Alright? That's why when a woman goes to a doctor, so we have a certain protocol that she follows. She goes to a doctor, so she should when she leaves the doctor, she should always ask the doctor whether the doctor expects any reason that she may start staining or bleeding. Because that way, if she does start staining, doesn't track down the doctor, and the doctor look at the chart and say, oh yeah, there's a little bit of friable tissue right there on the spot. You say, look, I'm going home tonight, and since you're poking around, is that going to cause any kind of bleeding? So we'll be a little bit defensive maybe, but then they'll say nothing, or they'll say, well, you know, you have a little bit of yeast infection, you have a little bit of a softness to the tissue, and that way if she bleeds that night, we have an alibi ready. And then in addition, whenever a woman is going to be seen by a doctor, so she should always ask him whether he's going to be doing any procedure that will go past the cervix. So again, for the most part, not going to happen. Because anything which goes past the cervix, she's going to know about 2 weeks in advance and prepare for. So nowadays, not there are very few things that go past the cervix that are not very, very significant things. So, but maybe once in a while it's going to happen, so it's worthwhile for a woman to ask. Because if it does go past the cervix, it will make her into a nida. If it goes past the cervix, and it's an instrument of more than a half to three quarters of an inch in diameter, right? And so, if it's if the answer is yes, there is something that's going to cause some kind of bleeding. So then, in her own mind, she should say, "Well, is this the best time for me to be here?" So if it's right before a period, it's not a bad time, she'll lose a day. If it's right after a period starts, and before she counted the 7 clean days, not bad, she'll lose a day. But let's say it's in the middle of the time and she's permissible to her husband. So then she may be losing out in a whole month. So she should tell the doctor, they have to go through this now. Can't we do this 10 days or something? Right? So that's why this is an important thing to be aware of. And again, when a woman goes to a doctor, two questions. Question number one is, are you going past the cervix? Almost always, the doctor will say no, right? But if he is, or she's going past the cervix, find out whether it's the situation where there's supposed to be any kind of bleeding, right? And then, even if, as I assume will happen most of the time, the doctor will say no, let's go back. That he's not going past the cervix, then before she leaves the doctor, she should ask him whether she should expect any kind of bleeding because of what he saw. All right, those are the an important upshot. Okay, any questions about the perhaps she does not make her into a nida? If a woman wipes, it's a very common question. A woman wipes herself with toilet paper, does it make her into a nida? So in America, most folks are makel in that, and the reasoning is because they see it as a kesem, and the toilet paper itself is not mekabel tuma, not synthetic, but it's not mekabel tuma because it's useless. Something which is useless can have a mekabel tuma. All right. So any questions about this chunk? Go ahead.
After cleaning, does it go through the five-day period?
Goes through after staining, probably not. Probably not. So in that case, we'll only demand. That's a good question. Do 5 and 7. Well, we would do 5 and 7 also. If we'll when we discuss the source of the 5 days, then we'll point out that there will be situations where we would certainly permit 4 days instead of 5 days. But the starting position is always 5 days. It would be more of a lenience. Okay, so let's take a few minutes out now and just discuss some of the thinking behind the Taharas HaMishpacha that that this is one of the areas of halacha where the Gemara itself explains to us why we have the whole system. The Gemara Nida says that that the reason for the whole system that we abstain from being with our wives on a cyclical basis is in order that when my wife comes back from mikveh, that she is as new to me, the Gemara says, as a kala leaving her chuppah. And there was a rabbi that the Torah understood that the physiological pleasure and satisfaction was a very important part of marital life, and therefore the Torah itself, in order to make sure that that this part of married life would not become routine or would not become boring, so therefore the Torah designed a certain way that a woman will always be seem new to her husband on a frequent basis, to renew that part of one's life, right? That explains the Easter part. So then the question is, well, why does a woman become Temeya? Why does she become banned and prohibited to go to Mikdash, the Ikorbonos? Why did we say that menstruation creates Tumah as well? So here there's a Ramban. Ramban quotes a Kuzari that says that we know that the Torah is extremely focused on the concern for life. Right? We know that if a person becomes Tomei, right, if a person becomes Tomei, then they cannot go to Beis HaMikdash. Right? They can't bring Korbanos. Why can they not go to Beis HaMikdash? Numerous answers are found in different Mephoshim and Midrashim. One is that that a woman who just became a menstruant, so there's always a little bit of so I wouldn't say sadness, but a little bit of aggravation. So we can't send her into Mikdash. Person has to be able to pray to daven the Kadosh Baruch Hu with a full heart. She's going to be a little bit aggravated that she can't share this whole thing with her husband. And that's one possibility. And of course, vice versa. But in addition, we know that the Torah wants us to realize that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us very much to take advantage of this world, not focus on the world to come. And therefore, when a person has come into contact with death, so they can't go to Mikdash, right? They can't bring a korban. So the Kuzari and the Ramban say, look how sensitive a Torah lifestyle is, that even when you come into contact with potential life, you gotta respect it. Even the loss of potential life, does that happen? Every period is a loss of potential life. So even then you have to be able to mark it, to note it, and to be sensitive to it. And that's it's a fascinating thing, because it's one of the areas where the Torah matches what's going on in a woman's heart. Right? When a woman has a period, so certainly if she's trying to have children, every time she's a period it becomes a very, very source of upsetness. Right? Because the way things work, she first of all, has no control over it, and second of all, that she only has an opportunity once a month, and everything being perfect, lined up, that's not a major opportunity. It's 12 possible times a year. So a woman's trying to have children, every time that she has a menstruation, it's a source of upsetness and aggravation. And thank God, in our community, many people, the demographics are such that many people are getting married and having children, Baruch Hashem. So if a woman has trouble having children, then the source of a great amount of sadness. So apparently the Torah said that that since the Kadosh Baruch Hu in his wisdom knew that a woman would be somewhat sad, let's say, every time she gets a period, so she gets a certain space. The Torah says, mark it, note it, so that the husband realizes what the wife's going through a little bit and doesn't just dismiss it. So then that explains the Tumah part, and that explains the Iser part. Right? In fact, the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, the life of the Flex, the Rambam writes that if you go through by Yikra, we did two parts already, Shmini Tzvim and Tzorah, after mercy, you'll find that most of the time, most people are tired. Right? So he explains, why should that be? He says, because what they did being tummy, primarily tummy means they can't go to Mikdash, they can't bring a korban. It's not bad, it's just not dirty, it's just distance from Beis HaMikdash. So the Rambam says that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to make sure that a person doesn't just drop into Beis HaMikdash. That a person, whenever you go to Beis HaMikdash, your whole life centers around it. So you're planning, you have to bring a korban. You have to figure out when is your wife going to be permissible, not permissible. Right? When is she going to be with Teres? And then you have to work, and then when she's going to go to Mikdash, work that part of the month out. So once you narrow it down to 2 weeks during the month, then you have to figure out if in those 2 weeks you can't go to any Levayas the week before. You can't do any hospital visits the week before. Right? If you're a doctor, you can't do rounds the week before. So you're going to bring a korban to Yerushalayim, your whole schedule for that entire month centers around it. That's and you have to be careful not to touch any shrotzim or anything. So you have to. There's a whole different way of living. We don't appreciate this. So why? Because Baruch understood that the most exciting thing in the world, if a person has constant access to it, it doesn't so it loses its excitement. So you think we have the base of Mikdash, that it's never going to lose the excitement. No, you have a base of Mikdash, you can go anytime you want, and it'll also become, we say in Yiddish, Vachadik. It'll become like a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, it's not going to be Shabbos anymore. So therefore, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah of Tumah to make sure that it's always something very, very special. So this a very, very similar pattern is true, and the Torah used the exact same mechanics vis-a-vis our wives, relations, physical relations. So when he was first married, when things, this will never become vachadik, he'll never lose his passion, his excitement, his pleasure. The great thing, that's true. But again, anything that's because the Torah gave us the system. Without the Torah system, so it has to be. If it's going to become all the time, every single non-stop, we're able to be together, so at some point it's going to lose its excitement. So Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us this mitzvah, the Torah of Mishpach, to make sure we never lose its passion or excitement. Okay. Okay, let's try to do another topic. We have time. Let's do the topic of Dam Basulim, of the laws of the first night. You did this later on, but put it now off. One of the ways that Shulam become a Nida is relations the very, very first time. Okay, that'll make her into a Nida. And as you said a few moments ago, even without any kind of bleeding, that'll make her into a Nida. What are we concerned about? There's a little tissue, just a few centimeters up the opening of the vagina. That tissue is called the basulum, it's called the hymen. And when that tissue is broken, it causes bleeding. Now, truth be told, that in the Gemara's time, it caused a tremendous amount of bleeding. Gemara talks about, those who are learning Suvis this year know that the Gemara talks about that there was so much blood came out that Chazal said maybe there's a little pool of blood sitting behind this tissue. That's how much blood came out. So, the Gemara, that's how it happened. There's a little tissue there, and the breaking of the tissue gives her discomfort, pain, obviously, and then causes some kind of bleeding. Nowadays, in our own time, our experiences are different. Because the way the hymen works, it starts when a woman is 3 years old, the very latest, and it's very quite thick. And as a woman gets older and older, she's in her teens, in her late teens, so then this tissue becomes thinner and thinner and thinner. Until, at some point, the perforation. And then that perforation begins to spread so that the hymen ultimately becomes just a series of scar tissue around the vagina. Becomes, it's called the hymenal tags, or hymenal ring. Little bumps, that's all it is at the end, right? So, that's the way it is. We are concerned that husband and wife are together for the very first time, and the husband pierces the hymen, and breaks the hymen, so we are concerned that maybe there'll be some hymenal bleeding. That's not a problem. Does it make you into a nida? I'm not bleeding his womb. But what about the next night? Right? So at what point do we say, well, it's hymenal bleeding, or maybe it's not hymenal bleeding, maybe it's maybe this bleeding is some kind of uterine bleeding. Maybe this is when people get very, very excited, they marry for the very first time together. So maybe the staining is from the uterus. Maybe it's what we call dam chimpul, blood that comes as a result of such passion and excitement. So how are we going to know? So therefore the rabbis made a rule that dam besulim equals dam nida. Right? So once, it happens once in a lifetime. Life would be a little bit easier if they wouldn't have made this rule. And they made this rule that the bleeding which takes place in preparation for the Arison, so that that So Chazal made this rule, not preparation of the ears, I'm sorry, that any bleeding which comes out as a result of the besul of the hymen being broken, Chazal said that should be treated like dam nida, like menstrual blood. It's a tremendous chiddush, because we just spent a lot of time explaining that if it's clear cut womb blood, you don't have to worry about it. So this is the exception to the rule. I have wound blood, and the Torah said this wound blood should be considered to be as if it would be nida blood. It's a tremendous innovation. And then the rabbi took a step further and said that sometimes there will be bleeding the very first night, and you're not going to know it because it's covered with zera with semen. So therefore, made a rule that really the very first time that husband and wife have relations, that will make you into a nida. It's not the bleeding necessarily, but even without any kind of bleeding, relations per se make you into a nida. So that rule is called the rule of Bo'el Be'ilas Mitzvah Gomero Peresh. Right? What's Bo'el Be'ilas Mitzvah Gomero Peresh? He does Be'ilas Mitzvah. He and his wife are together for the very first time. He completes being together and then they separate. But the point is the following. Every word here carries a point. The first point is that every so often a Kala has a question. She says, well, can I have the hymen removed? She goes to a doctor. The doctor says the hymen is very, very thick. It's going to be very painful. He may or may not be right, 50-50. So let's have it removed surgically. So our approach would be, we would try to avoid that. Maybe after the husband and wife tried to be together, maybe the second week, 3 weeks of marriage. But we try to avoid it, right? Unless it's something very unusual. Why is that? Because the Medrash which says that when a husband has beer with his wife for the very first time, so he actually completes his wife and makes a special bris, a special covenant between husband and wife, that they went through this together. They went through, in other words, beer Rishon, being together for the very first time, is not an easy experience. Beer Rishon requires a lot of sensitivity on part of the husband. A lot of sensitivity, and requires a certain amount of commitment and courage on behalf of the wife, because the breaking of the hymen is painful, and women are aware that it's painful, and therefore that's one of the ingredients. The very first night of husband and wife is that there's not much you can do about it. I mean, anybody can do anything about it. It's going to be painful. But it's important that you're sympathetic and empathetic with your wife, and that you appreciate that you're going to go through some pain. It's going to be difficult, and then once one has gone through it, so then one has sort of gone through an experience together. But it's very important to be sensitive. It's very important also that sometimes during the first time that husband and wife are together, so the wife retracts a little bit, and sometimes the husband's a little bit offended. I guess they just got married. Right, they get very, very nervous. So it's important to appreciate that she's just pulling back, either because of pain or anticipated pain. It's very, very real. It has nothing to do with her husband, the relation, or anything. She's about to feel pain. So she pulls back a little bit. The husband just has to sort of be encouraging of his wife. But it's one of the very first tests of marriage. So in any event, the marriage says, but a husband and wife will go through this together, so then they have a special covenant, a special bris. The Gemara explains, because until the husband does this, the uterus is not complete, so to speak. It's not open. It can't hold the baby. Conception won't take place for most people. So now, when the hymen is broken, it's the husband, together with the God, has completed the creation of his wife. So it's not a halach, it's a medrash. So in this case, we can't say that Alfie's in. If I could trouble you just to write your name and a phone number, just in case when it comes up, it's hard for me to. The classroom, and again, hasn't happened, I hope it won't happen. But, was that?
Email also.
Or an email, yeah, fine. So that's why if a woman requests a hymenectomy, we would discover, we wouldn't say it's also, can't say it's prohibited, it's a medrash. But we would say we would discourage it. If they're married a week already, and then the husband and wife are having difficulty, then it's fine. And say, fine, then, I'll go along with it then. There are other options also. In any event, So that's Boel Vilas Mitzvah, Gomer, they complete being together, portion and they separate. In other words, even though she will become a Nida as a result of relations, but since this is all rabbinics, the rabbi said will complete relations any way you want. Stay with your wife as long as you want. There's another din, which will never happen, but you have to be aware of it, and that is what would happen if a husband and a wife if are together, having relations, and the wife says in the course of relation, I think I'm a Nida. Right? So the halacha is that from that point on, he has to minimize the pleasure that they're getting from relations. So he lifts himself off his wife's body a little bit and waits for excitation to die down and then withdraws. Right? In this case, we don't say that. It's the exact opposite. As far as the Torah is concerned, they can be together. If there's any bleeding, it's womb blood. The rabbi said we're concerned that maybe the womb blood will get mixed with the uterine bleeding, so therefore we want it to be more strict, but they didn't go so far as to say that she becomes a Nida on the biblical level. They said, no, go there, complete being together. Be together as long as you're still having relations, stay here as long as you want, and then once it's completed, then when one withdraws, but once one withdraws from one's wife, then she has the status of a Nida. Right? Even the first night of one's wedding. That's the way it is, and that's why if you are... right, we'll discuss that next week. So that's... she becomes a Nida, a ramification we'll discuss next week. Now, which also realize that husband and wife may not have satisfying relations or significant relations of penetration the very, very first time they're together. The very first night is, again, it's a very exciting night, but there's a lot happening. When couples are very tired, they're very nervous, first time they see each other in this way, a lot of anxiety that could have been. You know, things may have, there could be some minor glitches in the wedding, so there could be, so it's a very full night emotionally. Hopefully, we rise with equanimity. Sometimes, and then I feel a little bit worked up. And certainly there's a tremendous amount of fatigue. And so, husband and wife are not always successful having relations the very first night. And that should not be the source of frustration or upsetness. That's there, from the way it works. I look at the exact opposite. When a couple comes and they're concerned about this, the exact opposite, I'm going to tell them it's very normal. It's not a problem. And number two is that this is part of what Chazal was talking about. See, you're learning how to do this together, how to have relations together. That's what it is. So it's important not to be aggravated or upset if that happens, and just take it in stride and with the shaming of the day or two after marriage, things go smoothly. Now, there's one other piece of the story, and that is that what happens if a woman has some kind of staining on the second or third time that husband and wife are together. And the first time, relations per se make her into a Nida. Finished. When has relations, she becomes a Nida. When didn't have relations, they have relations with her tomorrow night, and the next night, whatever it is. But it's the relations per se that make her into a Nida. Not the relations per se, but withdrawing from relations, right? But what about the second time that husband and wife are together? So here also, this is much less likely, but sometimes it happens that a woman will bleed the second time as well. That becomes a very serious question one has to raise to a rabbi. There are two questions that often come up. The first question is to evaluate whether one has had significant penetration enough. When a couple is married, they're together, they're not sure what's considered to be a significant penetration. Can they be together a second time? Or do they have to separate because the wife is a Nida? That often comes up. The rule of thumb that we use is if the majority of the Aver entered, so then we consider her to be a Nida at that point upon withdrawal. And if it's less than a majority, so then we can be together again and again until either she bleeds or until the majority enters. Right? That's rule number one. Sometimes the chassan and the kala have difficulty figuring it out, so they'll call her up in the morning and then they'll figure it out together and make a decision. Excuse me. On the second or third time, that husband and wife together, so we don't expect any kind of bleeding. But if there is some kind of bleeding, it's an important question to raise to a rav, and it's of extreme importance. I cannot stress this enough, that during these few weeks, that everything should be colored. All sheets should be colored. That's true. From 20 years, everything should be colored, undergarments and sheets. However, it's all the more important, and I can't impress it upon you enough, during the first weeks of marriage, because you don't know how your body works. So again, and during these first few times that husband and wife are together, to make sure that she has some kind of towel, if not colored sheet. Right. Now, it's getting late. One other topic, which one of the details in this regard, that is the following. That at no time during the first night or during the subsequent evenings that you're together should a woman do any kind of vaginal check, any kind of bidika. That would be a terrible, terrible thing to do. If I explain it now, I'll make a mess of it, so let's leave it for another time. But that's a very important point that we'll come back to, that one's wife should never be doing extra vaginal checks, but most important during this, and it's always important, but there's a specific reason why women sometimes make a mistake, and during the first few times that husband and wife are together, they think that's wise to do bidika. I'll explain why they think it's so, it's not so, and we have to be very, very careful about that. So probably later on I'll come back to this point, because the next week we'll discuss a lot of distancing. And then after Pesach, but Tuesday we'll come back to discuss this point. But at least this way you have the topic of the first night. Together with Hatzcholos Nida. Just the other day somebody came over to me and asked me, he was Yan Chosin, he was very, very concerned about the first night. So I thought that it's important, it doesn't pay to think about it so much. There's certain things, if you think about it a lot, then they become very unnerving. If you think about it, riding a bike, so it doesn't make any sense. I got these three little tires. Hold the first one totally out of it's in all the different physics. Certainly, you think about them. This is the same kind of thing also. You think about all the emotions of that particular night, so then it becomes, you don't think about it, you just go with it, flow naturally. A couple in love have just got married. And let the events sort of take you along with them, so then a lot less to be anxious or nervous about. Okay. Good. Okay, so we'll start with Davar Maharan in 1 minute, okay?